And a big thanks to Darren and all the gang on 2FM Drive. It is Wednesday the 21st of May and you're listening to Game On with Andrew O'Connor. Coming up between now and the new music show with Beto Da Silva at 7 o'clock, Paul Curry and Fergal Brennan joins us to talk about all things association football as we look ahead to the much anticipated Europa League final in Bilbao. And as we're 24 hours out from free choice for Camogie players, Damien Lawler has his weekly look at GA matters, while Nadine Doherty previews the Munster and Connacht Ladies Provincial Football Finals. And we'll also hear from the best player in this season's Women's Six Nations Championship, Aoife Wafer. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552 or WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Now Paul, welcome to Game On Studio this sunny Wednesday. Thank you very much for joining us as always. And you in good form? Happy Wednesday.
I am, Andrew. I very much am. Looking forward to tonight's game.
Yeah, it should be. I don't know if it's going to be a cracker, but it's definitely going to be dramatic. It's difficult to know what to expect from both of those clubs indeed. But let us start with domestic football action. And good news for the Republic of Ireland. Our Euro 2028 hopes have been boosted by by UEFA. They confirm places at the tournament will be reserved for the two best ranked host nations who don't automatically qualify. What does all that mean? Does that mean that we're guaranteed a spot? So, okay, England are going to qualify.
Yeah, that's a given.
So
looking at the last couple of competitions, and ever since they've increased the number of countries that qualify, if you just look at Scotland and Wales alone, Scotland have qualified for the last two, the tournament that was played in 2021 and the tournament that was played in 2024. And Wales obviously went very close in the 2016 tournament. Mm. They also qualified for the 2020. So one of, or either both, Wales and Scotland have qualified for the last three competitions. So you would like to think it has significantly enhanced our chances.
We haven't mentioned Northern Ireland.
No. I wouldn't want to be hedging my bets on Northern Ireland, to be honest with you. I think it's more likely that Wales or Scotland will do the business for us. And of course, like you mentioned, it's pretty much a gimme that England will be there. So it's huge. I think it is huge. I think this all but guarantees some route to the
staying finals. Slightly pessimistic. If England, Scotland and Wales all qualify automatically, then Ireland and Northern Ireland will both qualify through this back door.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's pretty good news.
That's brilliant news.
So we can be hopeful.
Unfortunately, we can't be overly optimistic about whatever group we're going to get drawn into and see a path that we would qualify as one of the top two teams in the group, or our Nations League campaigns haven't been too fruitful down through the years. But there's so many ways of qualifying for this competition. With the Nations League, you now throw in the fact that we're going to be one of the host nations. If we don't make it for this one, Andrew, we're not going to make it to any competition. We'll be there.
Let's look ahead at the future then. Ireland under 21's head coach Jim Crawford has given three League of Ireland players their first call-ups for friendlies against Croatia and Qatar next month. He's handed first caps to Cork City midfielder Cathal O'Sullivan, Shamrock Rovers defender Corey O'Sullivan and Drogheda United forward Warren Davies. No surprise, because they've all caught the eye.
They certainly have, and I mean, in particular, Warren Davies has popped up with a number of goals for Drogheda this season, and he's been really important part of particularly the first round of fixtures when they managed to gain so many points and had such a fantastic start to the season. I think Cathal O'Sullivan has done brilliant things at Cork City. It looks as if he's going to be on the move, Andrew, come this summer. I saw there was very strong reports linking him with Crystal Palace. Obviously, there's a link there, Paddy McCarthy. Stephen Rice obviously being involved with Crystal Palace. I'm sure he's got a really close connection to the players who are still playing on the ground here. So yeah, brilliant to see League of Ireland involvement. You've obviously got the likes of Adam Murphy, Sam Curtis, who has played in the league previously. You've got Sean Grehan from Bowes. You've got Jad Hakiki as well. So you've a number of players there who've been involved in this league. And of course, Mason Melia will grab headlines given the fact that he's going to be on the move to Spurs over the next 12 months. He scored a number of brilliant goals in the last couple of weeks. So yeah, it'd be great to see how they get on. There's been a number of players who've graduated into the senior squad already. Be interesting to see who might be the next one out of that group to kind of really take a grip of the 21s and lay down a marker within these games against Qatar and over the next couple of months and see how they get on.
I know Heimer Hallgrimsson has called a couple of those younger players into his squad because, of course, he wanted to give the championship players a bit of a break. Having a look at Heimer's squad, senior squad, and Jim Crawford's under 21 squad now, is your heart full of little hope for, you know, the green shoots that are coming forward?
Yeah, the results and maybe some of the performances would give you a little bit of hope. I still think we're
you're piffed at the start of that. Didn't really convince me.
I still think the gaps that we've had over the last couple of years are still very much there. A lot of that kind of comes into the middle of the park and creative players maybe in that final third who can really open up defences. We look as if we've got a little bit more of a defensive foundation to build upon. It seems as if we've maybe ironed out some of those mistakes that have been made in previous campaigns, and probably mistakes that you would expect, Andrew, because to be fair to Stephen Kenny, he gave a lot of chances to a lot of young players, and if you think of goals from outside of the box, we never seem to get on top of that. It seems as if we're a little bit more efficient from a defensive perspective, and we should be, because we've got players who are doing particularly well in the Premier League, the likes of your Jacob Rines, your Nathan Collins. Those types of players should be kind of standing up at this stage, but there's a real lack of strength and depth in the middle of the park, and I say that with players who are playing the top end of the Premier League. We just don't have that in the Premier League alone, actually. We don't have that pass for the ball. Josh Cullen does a decent job of screening in front of the defence, but I'm not sure we have that player who can kind of link possession and get us playing forward and, you know, penetrate the ball through gaps. And then we still lack that number 10 who can play off the shoulder, get balls in behind opposition and create a huge amount of problems. So there's signs, I think, within Heimer's last couple of windows with the international team that we are starting to move in the right direction, but I think you need to be realistic at the same time and look at the pool of players that we have, and we're still a little bit off in my eyes.
Okay, the production team have just rang UEFA, and UEFA have confirmed to them that Northern Ireland will not have the opportunity to qualify for the Euro 2028 as a host nation.
Well, I was tentative about,
even if they were on the list originally.
Yeah.
So, yes. So anyway, that's confirmation. So that sort of boils that conversation down to one less opposition team. So, fingers and toes crossed. It's difficult to say we're there until we get confirmation. But yes, it looks very good indeed. Let's turn our eyes close at home and to the League of Ireland. And some stadium news as well. Shelburne have done a good deal, and Treaty United as well have secured a long-term lease on their stadium in Marketsfield.
Yeah, I think starting with Shells first and foremost, they have put together an 18-year lease with the AUL to ensure that they will be able to use that as their home for the academy and for their first team to train out of. So There's plans there to make advancements and improvements to some of the pitches. There's, it's going to be boosted by a $500,000 grant from the Community Sports Facilities Fund. So exactly the pieces of news, I guess, that you want to see associated with League of Ireland clubs. There's been a huge amount of progress made with drawing new fans in. The product itself and the pitch has improved, I think, over the last couple of years. But ultimately, the facilities, both the stadiums and the training grounds, are desperately, desperately behind. So to see that Shells have at least nailed down a home for the next 18 years and with plans to improve that infrastructure, it bodes well, I think, Andrew, for them and hopefully for the rest of the league and other clubs to maybe look at what Shells have done and how they've gone about securing this funding and securing this training facility. And hopefully you would see then that players will ultimately be developed in those grounds. They've got decent staff in the building. Get them into some sort of pathway. Hope that they progress through and ultimately produce players for not only the League of Ireland, but we're seeing, you know, like you mentioned, the 21s team and the senior team. A lot of these players are starting off in League of Ireland academies and playing in League of Ireland teams before making that move, whether it be to the UK or Europe. So good news for Shells.
Okay, and big things happening in Cork City this week because the players are getting used to a new manager. And having watched last Friday's last gasp defeat to St Pat's from the stand in Inchicore, new Cork City manager Gerard Nash takes charge of the team this week. His first league game is at Eamon DC Park in Galway. The 38-year-old former Ipswich Town player was installed as Cork's new boss last Thursday, succeeding Tim Clancy, who resigned abruptly following the 2-1 loss to Derry City less than a fortnight ago. It's a first senior managerial job for the Mead-born man, who was first team coach at the Swedish club Gaish in 2024-25, helping the unfashionable club finish sixth in the 16-strong top flight last season. And last Friday, after the game in Inchicore, Gerard spoke to our own correspondent, Tony O'Donoghue. If I can find the piece, he did speak to Tony.
My job is a results-based job, and I need to turn some of the good performances that we've had and the aspects of the good performance into points.
Were you given any assurances about a budget, about strengthening the squad?
Look, it's all quite new. I left Sweden this morning. I've been in four countries today for various reasons, getting flights and things. So we've a lot of things to discuss. Obviously, we want to strengthen. We want to make the club as strong as we can be. We've got a fantastic and passionate fan base that we want to make proud. So we'll always be looking to do the best we can with what we have. And those things are ongoing. Those talks are ongoing. But yeah, absolutely, we want to give the fans the best team they can, playing, fighting for their area on the pitch.
What would you say is your kind of coaching philosophy, or will there be a style you'll try and implement with Cork City?
Well, my coaching philosophy will be based on trying to put a team on the pitch that represents the area where people are from. That's really simple. So, I've been in different places. I understand the fans want to see different things in different places. My belief and what I see in the people of Cork is that they're a really fantastic sporting area, across many sports, obviously. They're passionate, and that's what I want the fans to feel. So we want to play front-footed attacking football and make the fans proud of what they see on the pitch, that it represents them.
Will you be basing yourself in the Cork area?
Absolutely. I will travel to Cork tonight and look forward to living there full-time permanently and being in Cork every day.
And that's Gerry Nash talking to Tony O'Donoghue. Good news for Cork City that they acted so quickly?
Yeah, I think so. They needed somebody in the building pretty sharp, and I think it's important that somebody is based in Cork if they're going to lead that side forward. If you think of the passion that the Cork fans have, I think embracing that and getting yourself into the community is important. But for Cork, Andrew, I think it's one win in 14 games, so they need a change as soon as possible. You'd be hoping that they might see some sort of uptick in form similar to what Waterford saw when they changed manager, maybe a different voice with just maybe different opinions or sees different ways of getting more out of players. But it needs to turn quick enough. And actually, the game against Galway is not a bad one. They're 8 points behind Galway in the table. That is the next team that is closest to them, because at the moment it feels like there's a bit of a gap opening between Sligo, Cork and the next couple of teams. So a big performance, a big result, I would say not getting beaten is probably the first priority for Gerard Nash. And yeah, you wish him well.
Yeah, you do indeed. Let's hope he gets more of a managerial bounce than Ruben Amorim did at Manchester United, because that's who we're going to be talking about next, along with Angie Postecoglou. Delighted to say we're joined by Liverpool-based football journalist Fergal Brennan. Fergal, happy Wednesday to you.
Happy Wednesday. How's things?
Things are nice and sunny and all is well. Manchester United and Spurs fans are currently in deep meditation. They have no idea what to expect from this evening, and either the rest of us. Fergal, how do you even look ahead to this game with two teams who have had their worst league performance consistently for many, many years, and they both end up in a European final?
It's honestly been one of the most difficult games to predict as a sports journalist. I've been working with various clients this week and writing pieces and talking about the final, and nobody has any clue how it's going to go down. Every single person I've spoken to has said the same thing, which is it'll probably be a bit mad, it'll be a bit crazy, there'll be goals. How on earth are both of them in the final? But here we are. Every time I watch them in the Premier League, I think, okay, there'll be a positive here that will kind of give you a bit of a form indicator going into the final. And it just doesn't exist. I've never seen two teams completely just bin off the domestic picture to focus on a final. And I'd say for Amorim and for Postecoglou, that's been the case since before the semi-finals. I think they've been so focused and they've put so much resources into getting to the final and winning the final as their only route into European competition next season, that everything has hung on this for months. I don't think it's a recent thing. And I really don't think they pay too much mind to how the results have gone in the league, because I think from Postecoglou's position, he knows that there's a huge chance that he'll be out of a job in the summer if they lose, even if they don't lose. Ruben Amorim, I don't think he's under that level of pressure, but that's only based on the short amount of time that he's been in position. He's found it really, really hard at Manchester United, and that's probably his saving grace, regardless of what the result is tonight. You look at the teams and you look at the situation that they're in, you maybe just tip for United because of the experience that they've got in some important areas. Bruno Fernandes has been in really good form. Casemiro has improved a little bit in the last few months, and he's got years and years of European finals experience in them legs, whereas Tottenham, I think it's only Son that's left over from the Champions League final that they lost to Liverpool a few years back. They don't have that. They do have a bit more freshness and maybe a bit less fear. But if you had to kind of stick your money on someone, I'd probably just go for the bit more of experience that Manchester United have got.
Yeah, probably keep it about 50 cents. Paul, looking into your crystal ball, which is usually clearer than mine, can you plot a winner between these least worst teams?
Is no too short an answer?
No.
I'd probably just favour Spurs tonight. And the reason for that is I just don't see a huge amount of goals in that Man U team. And I actually thought for spells of the game against Chelsea last week, they were decent enough without Chelsea imposing themselves massively on that game. I just look at the Spurs team and I think that they might have a little bit more threat at the top end of the pitch. And actually, if you look at the Premier League this season, they have scored 21 more goals than Manchester United. Mm. And they've also conceded a lot of goals and they are very, very weak defensively, and Tottenham have proved that on numerous occasions this season. But I just think if you're looking at a final and thinking of who has the potential of maybe popping up with a moment of magic or creating something out of nothing, I feel as if Tottenham have a little bit more in that department than Manchester United. But to Fergal's point, experience of the big occasion, Manchester United in cup finals tend to find a way of getting over the line. I wouldn't be at
Harry
all surprised.
Maguire.
Yeah, Harry Maguire. I mean, the fact that they're in this final is bananas in the first place. If you think back to that Lyon game when they scored 3 goals in the last 6 minutes to get themselves over the line. There's just something about Spurs, and I don't know why I'm saying that, because Spurs are beyond Spursy when it comes to big occasions and failing to get over the line. But there's something about Ange Postecoglou and this side that I feel might just have that little bit tonight. I think they'll play with a little bit more freedom than Man U. I think they typically do. Whether or not that's going to be enough and whether or not they have enough to create enough chances to open up Manchester United remains to be seen. But I think that just might be the difference maker.
A couple of big absentees for Spurs in terms of injuries. They haven't, even though they've been looking at this final and trying to build up for it, Fergal, they haven't been too lucky over the last couple of weeks with injuries.
No, and that'll obviously play into the team that Postecoglou is able to put out. Dejan Kulusevski is the big one in my mind. I know James Maddison's a big favourite amongst the Tottenham fans, and Lucas Bergvall is going to miss out as well. But Dejan Kulusevski, for me, he's been so important for them at various points this season. He's got that running power through the middle of the pitch, and he does score a lot of important goals when the chips are down. James Maddison's obviously got that bit of creativity and he's good from set pieces, but Kulusevski is the one for me that I look at and think, when we talk about teams that are above Spurs in the table, he's the player that often gets mentioned of, you know, which Tottenham player would get into, you know, a top six, a top four team. For me, he's the one that kind of pops up in that sense. But in saying that, and to kind of build on what Paul was saying about the pressure being slightly reduced on this Tottenham team, they've got a lot of players who there isn't really a lot of stock invested in. Odobert, Mikey Moore, the young academy player, Matthias Tell, we can't really get a handle on him based on the amount of time that he's been at the club. That might play to their advantage because they've got an opportunity to be a hero here in a final that they're not outsiders, but they're not favourites. United, as bad as they've been, they are favourites to win it. And I just, I look through the team that Postecoglou is probably going to put out. There'll be a couple of names that will come in that were rested for the Villa defeat at the weekend. But I think United, when I look at the players that they rested for their game, Ugarte, Garnacho, they're two players that can come in and make a difference. Ugarte can really get a handle on the back of the midfield. And Garnacho, you're looking for a player in a final, a bit of a maverick. He's got probably more evidence behind him than anybody in a Spurs shirt.
Paul, do you think with, you know, the couple of players that Fergal just mentioned, throw in Amad Diallo, Bruno Fernandes behind them, that little bit of guile that Fergal spoken about, that United may have a bit more going forward?
Yeah, potentially. I think Diallo being back fit over the last couple of weeks has certainly helped. I was impressed with him when he played against Chelsea. He's probably one of the few players in that Manchester United squad who you could reflect on the last 12 months and say, yes, he has improved and he's added a bit more to his game. Fernandes always has the potential to pop up with some moment of magic, as does Garnacho. Garnacho just hasn't done it consistently enough for me to pop out enough goals. So there are weapons within that team. I just think at the top end, you know, if you're looking at a focal point to build your attacks around, if Højlund starts tonight, I almost feel sorry for him sometimes when I see him in a Manchester United shirt. He looks so lost at the top end of the pitch. He seems to get out-muscled in any sort of duels that happen at the top end of the pitch. He doesn't seem to be able to run away from centre-halves. He hasn't been anywhere near efficient enough from
and he doesn't get the service that he needs.
And he doesn't get he doesn't seem to have anything going for him at this moment in time, and his physicality seems to let him down for the way that Amorim wants to play. If you think about Gorkes up at Sporting Lisbon and the centre forward that he would ideally like, Højlund just doesn't fit into that system. But yeah, there's certainly players there who could pop up with a moment of magic. It's probably going to be a squeaky kind of game.
Okay.
you would expect that given the form of both teams and how they've finished the Premier League season. But there's something about Spurs, I don't know what it is, that kind of leans me in that direction.
Well, let's hope they save the best of the season till last. Fergal, before we let you go, a score prediction for the crack.
2-1 United.
Okay, and Paul?
I'll go 1-0 Tottenham.
Okay, well, maybe may the best worst team win the Europa League this evening. And we're going to talk to the best player in the Women's Six Nations Championship after this break.
Game on. Rugby.
Now, delighted to say we are joined by the best player in the Women's Six Nations Championship for 2025. Aoife Wavert joins us on the line. Aoife, happy Wednesday to you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been a weird week so far, but yeah, no, being an exciting one all the same.
And I mean, where did you hear that news first and how did you react?
Oh, literally on Thursday, there was an event hosted by the Lord Mayor over in the Mansion House, and myself and Niamh O'Dowd, my teammate, were across in it, and it was basically about listening to young girls and hearing their say on how we can try stop the dropout rate. And at the very end, the Lord Mayor announced it, and I was just as shocked as everyone in the crowd, to be honest. I was definitely surprised by it. I hadn't a clue, like, our media team had kept it all under wraps, and then they just announced it at the very end where they came in with the trophy and all that. So, yeah, any of the videos going around are my genuine reaction, to be fair.
And the other three nominees, just to get that in context, was England winger Abby Dow, France second row Manet Falelu, and Scotland back row Evie Gallagher. That is a mighty company to be not only mentioned in, but actually ahead of them.
Yeah, no, it's a bit crazy, to be honest. Like, they're all phenomenal athletes, and there's so many people that could have and probably should have been nominated as well. Like, we've so many superstars on our team as well. So to be nominated is class, and then to get the fan support and to be voted as the best player in the Six Nations it's pretty indescribable, to be honest.
Now, I know you're keeping your feet firmly on the ground, but you're obviously named on the team of the tournament alongside Niamh Jones and Aoife Dalton, but you won 41% of the fan vote to take the award. I know again you're trying not to let yourself get too far ahead, but that must be great to not only sort of the so-called experts, but also the fans have fully behind you as well.
Yeah, it's a crazy feeling, to be honest, because like I just go out onto the pitch and I try to do my family and my teammates proud, and like thankfully I've been able to put out a couple of good performances, but like I've still so much to learn. Like at the end of the day, I'm only 22, and like I'm really excited for even what's to come at the end of the year in the World Cup. So yeah, no, it's a bit crazy, to be honest.
It is, but let's just sort of remind you of some of the stats. 4 tries in the championship, that was the joint most by any forward. 70 carries, that was the most of any player in the Six Nations, and that was for over 424 metres, beating 17 defenders in the process, the second highest of any forward in the championship, and that was a championship in which Ireland were third. So those numbers, and I know you like to do every little part of the job, of the sort of the multifaceted rugby job, you like to do everything as best as you can, but that must be gratifying just to look at those figures.
Yeah, well, to be honest, like I wouldn't be able to get any of them without the girls. Like they're the one that give me the ball or that trust me to go and do something, or they back me every day in training or on the pitch. So yeah, like I genuinely wouldn't be able to do it without them, and then obviously the likes of my family and them, the coaches and the sports staff as well, because it's the likes of the medical team that keep me fit and that keep me on the field. And then it's the coaches, even like the likes of Scott and Cotters and Dennis and Hugh have put a huge amount of work into me. And to be honest, I don't think I would have gotten near the likes of this without all of their help.
Let's talk about the team, if I can, and just ask you about the analysis process of how you all look back at the championship as a team. Obviously, finishing third, there were bits of the championship I'm sure you were all fairly happy with. Obviously, the second half against England, probably you were a little bit disappointed by. And I remember speaking to Bernard Jackman, and he said, I reckon if they'd played France later in the tournament, they probably would have beaten France. How do you guys look back as a squad at the championship?
Like, we haven't come together just yet as a squad to kind of review the whole championship. Like, the girls are taking some well-earned time off now before we get stuck into a World Cup pre-season. But personally, like, I'd look at it as it's probably some of those games got away from us, and it could have potentially been a tournament that we finished second instead of third in the likes of if we bet France, and if we would have bet Scotland and then put a bit more competition into England. But like, look, there's so many positives to take from it as well. Like, we've come such a long way in the 2 years that Scott's been over us, and like, it's a completely changed side to what was kind of pre-Scott's era, I suppose. But the end of this year is going to be incredibly exciting. But yeah, we'll definitely have to take some learnings from this year's Six Nations and kind of be a bit more, I suppose, like, just taking chances in those scoring zones, because we want to beat Tier 1 nations, and it's not very often that you get those chances when you're in their 22, so you have to take every one of them.
Okay, well, there is an exciting year ahead, and let's obviously look ahead briefly to the World Cup. Japan, Spain and New Zealand are waiting in Pool C of that World Cup in August and September. And, I mean, you must be looking forward to that, as well as the warm-up games against Scotland and Canada. It's going to be busy.
Yeah, I'm doing everything in my power to get back from it, to get back for it, and to just really put my hand up again for selection, because, like, the girls, that we're all so competitive, and we want to be part of a successful Ireland team. And like, that started a couple of years ago, but it's definitely thriving now. And it's really exciting. Like, we've played the Three Nations recent enough. Like, to be fair, we had a tour to Japan there a couple of years back. We played Spain in the kind of final of the WXV3, and then obviously we played New Zealand a couple of months ago. So they're very exciting fixtures, and they're ones that we're really, really looking forward to getting stuck into.
And before I let you go, I have to bring up a story in the Irish Independent today that you are attracting a bit of interest from England. Can you comment on that yet?
I'm just trying to get back from my knee. I haven't seen anything yet. So, yeah, no, I picked up an injury there against Wales. So I'm just doing everything I can at the minute to get back from it and to try put my hand up for selection again for the World Cup.
Okay, well, Aoife Wafer, thank you very much for joining us, the Guinness Women's Six Nations Player of the Tournament 2025. And we look forward to speaking to you again before that World Cup. Thanks for joining us. Happy Wednesday.
Well, cheers. Thank you very much.
This is 2FM's Game On.
And it is Wednesday's Game On, which means Damien Lawler is joining us for his weekly GA chat. And Damien, plenty to talk about, and no bigger issue to start this week than with the Scorts. Camogie look set for an historic week. Scorts could become part of the official kit, and as well as shorts for the first time ever when the vote is taken tomorrow. But lots of twists and turns along the way, and I suppose we're all just looking forward to tomorrow.
Yeah, that's about the size of it, Andrew. In my own opinion, I would have ventured up that this could have been potentially solved with an online special congress 2 weeks back, the day before the Munster Camogie final, which may have prevented in that game being deferred or postponed. However, Camogie Association would argue that they needed this time to talk to their delegates and get the message across that, you know, the time for choice has come now. And don't forget, when the issue came before the annual congress last year, Andrew, the shorts issue was rejected by the membership, and, you know, strongly enough, actually, it didn't get the necessary four motions were on the floor. All four were defeated, and effectively it put the issue on the back burner. We were told from an administration point of view that this could not be held again for a couple of years in terms of Congress. You'd be going up to 2027 with it, but the players decided no, that they weren't having this. And before that Munster final, they made their feelings be known. They had a protest before that subsequently, and I think it's led to probably a month of extremely negative publicity. This went mainstream very, very quickly. People had opinions. Camogie Association being castigated in several places. However, you know, my information is from talking to delegates and people around the country, the Camogie Association have been in regular contact with them. They've contacted all units, and the feedback coming back is allegedly positive, Andrew. That's a start anyway. And there's a feeling of confidence now that a special Congress tomorrow evening at Croke Park, throwing in at 7:30 p.m. that the issue, we could have white smoke by 8 o'clock earliest or 8:30 latest. And they're expecting the white smoke to be positive. So once they have that confirmation, it'll be relayed back to us. Now, media are not being allowed into the room, so that may actually help the voting process. I'm not sure if it will or not, but there's a designated room for the media to get a statement from the Camogie Association President Brian Malloy afterwards. And maybe delegates will feel more comfortable voting without the media, I don't know. But I think it's a paramount at this stage, in my own opinion, that for the first time in the history of the Camogie Association, the choice of shorts is made available as a official equipment and gear to wear alongside skirts. And I think that will solve a lot of problems immediately. I dread to think what will happen, Andrew, if the vote doesn't go through tomorrow evening. But they are very confident, so I've been told today, that the work has been done, that the feedback is extremely positive, and that the choice will be given. However, they would add, you can take nothing for absolutely certain in this world, and they'd be right to do that. Because there was a lot of caution and caveats being put out in the last week or two. But in this day and age, you'd imagine the choice should be made available from delegates tomorrow evening. So it will prevent a catastrophe if that vote goes through. And I say, I wouldn't like to think the consequences if it doesn't.
And it's been bizarre to have these conversations in 2025 and that women don't have the choice of what to wear when they're playing their own sport, and we're trying to keep as many girls and women involved in sports as possible. So that puts a further bizarre context on it. Aoife Murray's been on this programme quite a bit over the last couple of weeks, trying to give us sort of an insider's context. And she said that, you know, it was so important, and this has all come because the delegates that were sent in the last few years were not representing the thoughts and the wishes of the players. So tomorrow all boils down to that one problem solved. Will the delegates actually represent the players that they are supposed to be representing?
If they don't, in my opinion, you're going to have a disrupted championship. And that's putting it mildly. You can already see what's after happening in the last few weeks. So you don't need a degree in logistics or science to predict what's next around the corner. And we had a situation last weekend, Andrew, even whereby the Leinster Kilkenny Camogie final between Kilkenny and Wexford, you know, they had their protest before the game. They decided to go ahead, change back into skirts and play the game. But consent was not given to the likes of ourselves on the Saturday game or media photography for, you know, photographs or video footage to be taken while the girls played in their skirts. So that was another setback for everybody involved in the coverage of the game. And, you know, we've already had a match not fulfilled. We've had protests made, players changing back into their skirts. We've had consent not being given for the games to be filmed. So, you know, you can imagine what's going to come next. Players are going to withdraw their services, potentially. This is my own opinion. And I think everybody who's voting tomorrow has to realise that that is the doomsday scenario here, you know, that they are voting for choice, but not that it should be railroaded into any choice, but the decision is fairly straightforward, I'd say, on this. Give players a choice of what they want to wear. Let the issue be done and let everybody go back to focus on the games and see, can anybody stop Cork in the senior championship?
Let's move on to some of the action at the weekend, because we've got another very, very busy couple of days ahead of us at the weekend. Let's start with Sunday. We're going to go backwards, Damien, just to confuse things. And let's start with the Leinster and Munster senior round robins. Leinster, all the games kick off at 2 o'clock. Final round, round 5. Wexford v Kilkenny, Dublin v Galway, and Offaly v Antrim. I suppose let's start with Dublin and Galway in Parnell Park, 2 o'clock on Sunday, and lots to be played for there.
Huge game, effectively a place in the Leinster final up against Kilkenny, who are there for another year. Wexford's year is over, sadly, for them. So this comes down to Dublin versus Galway. Who will get through to a Leinster final? They'll all qualify out of Leinster, those three anyway. But will Nilo Chialacón's Dublin put one over Galway, managed by the former Dublin manager Micheál Donoghue, in the backyard at his Parnell Park? You know, I think Micheál Donoghue will know Parnell Park very well. He'll know the Dublin squad very well. He developed quite a few of them last year. A lot of young players come into his side, Andrew, playing good possession line hurling. Neil O'Callaghan is built upon that. And I think that's going to be a fascinating tussle. Galway started off miserably in the championship against Kilkenny. They were absolutely dismal, but they've really picked it up. They're free scoring at the moment, and it'll be a cracking game. I couldn't call that. I really couldn't. I think that could be a tight pitch. It might suit Dublin yet. I'm not sure. But whoever wins gets into a Leinster final. And they'll fancy giving Kilkenny a good rattle, either of them. In Tullamore then, there's an equally important game. You know, you've effectively a relegation playoff here. Offaly versus Antrim. Offaly in their own backyard are going to be very hard to beat against an Antrim side that are out of form. And it hasn't really happened for Davy Fitz and Antrim as of yet, Andrew. In fairness to him, he's down maybe up to six starting players, including two key forwards. You know, the moment he took over almost, the week before almost, Conal Cunning got a serious injury. He's probably their top player, and it hasn't worked out at all. But look, to summarise, Leinster, Kilkenny back in the final, waiting for the winners of Dublin Galway, and in the other direction then, a battle to avoid a potential drop, Offaly versus Antrim. So it will reach an interesting climax at the weekend in Leinster.
Yes, it will. And Davy and his relationship with the officials was sort of highlighted last weekend. So let's hope they all have a more seamless time this Sunday. Throw-ins for 2 o'clock, not kick-off, as I said earlier on. And the hurling gods just shouted down the line at me there. And Munster then, 4 o'clock, throw-ins for Limerick and Clare and Cork and Waterford. And I suppose before last weekend, we all had different ideas about how the Munster Championship was going. But Limerick blowing away Cork has really put the cat among the pigeons.
Andrew, they really blew them away, and that's a head-scratcher, you know. Now, there's every chance they'll meet again in the Munster final, and they could meet again beyond that as well. So how do you read last weekend's game in the grand context of things? I'm not so sure. But certainly if you're Cork, you're after maybe capitulating in the second half against Clare, and then you had this maybe match last weekend as well. So that's not a good thing for them. They beat Tipperary comprehensively, but they had an extra man for the entire 70 minutes plus. So where do Cork stand? I think the general feeling is if you stand off and let them play, they'll beat you. And if you get stuck into them and deny them the space, they might not. But Cork versus Waterford is a massive game down in the park. That's at 4 o'clock alongside Limerick and Clare at 4. You know, Waterford, they need to really access their full forward line, Andrew. Desi Hutchins was so frustrated last weekend coming off. Mikey Kiley, you know, a big target man in there, but ended up coming out the field most of the time. So whatever way their game plan is gone, I think they need to use the space in the park to get that inside forward line, either get them connecting with Stephen Bennett or get Desi Hutchinson back in goal scoring, point scoring form, because it's crucial. Can Waterford do it? Well, they certainly can, but you'd imagine Cork were so bad last weekend that they will have a response for Waterford. A Cork win then will see them into the Munster final, most likely against Limerick, who play Clare. Clare are out of it now, the All-Ireland champions. That's the big news of last weekend, of course. And will John Kiely, will he throw in some players maybe who are on the fringes of the panel? Will he give them a run? That's going to be interesting as well, because Limerick and Clare, there won't be any love lost there either. So no. Limerick will want to send a message. Meanwhile, Tipperary watch on to see whether they go into the All-Ireland series or if there's a chance for them to get into the Munster final. So look, it hasn't failed to deliver again this year. It's been an exciting championship, Andrew.
It has indeed, and there's nothing to motivate a Clare man more than seeing a couple of Limerick jerseys against them. So let's see how that goes. Let's move backwards to Saturday and the All-Ireland Football Senior Championship. And lots of good games here. Meath and Cork in Park Chalchin with a 3 o'clock start on Saturday afternoon. And by Meath's form and the way they dispatched Dublin, they won't be too afraid of Cork.
No, they won't. That's a game either team can win. And Meath will be disappointed that they didn't get over the Leinster final. Like, that might have come a bit early in their development for an outsider's point of view, but when you're in that bubble and in that camp and a Leinster final beckons and it's not Dublin, you really have to take your chance. Now, to be fair, Louth were there twice before them in consecutive times, so they took their chance and they didn't. Cork will be a bit aggrieved over losing to Kerry in Munster. When they get it together, they're a top 8 to top 10 team, there's no doubt about that. But I think Meath at home, if there's any consistency in their play, they'll want to bounce back. But you know what? I wouldn't rule out a Cork run here. It depends on the frame of mind and the injuries. But that'll be a great game. Another great game then will be Louth versus Monaghan. That's actually going to be one of the games of the weekend, because Louth are on the crest of a wave. They're coming down to Newbridge to play this one. But Monaghan, Monaghan have never been too far away from the top 10 either in the last few years, despite maybe a much smaller playing pool than other counties. And they'll feel aggrieved by their exit from Ulster as well. And that will be a belter of a game. I think there'll be a good crowd down at that as well. You'd imagine Louth will travel in force. Really, really looking forward to that. And up in Armagh, then, it's Armagh versus Derry.
Speaking of belters.
Yeah, exactly, Andrew. And the gas thing here is, Derry have had nearly 6 or 7 weeks off. And you'd imagine that they have a chance of getting out of this group with the results going elsewhere in their favour, I feel. However, I am told there's still a couple of injuries that have happened in the past week or two that won't help them. And you'd imagine the reigning All-Ireland champions will want to bounce back from their Ulster final disappointment. But what will Derry bring to the camp? They've had 6-7 weeks to go away now and prepare, so there's no excuses. They've had more time than anybody else to get this right. And, okay, they have injuries, but, you know, that's what squads are there for as well. So, again, an Ulster derby and, at 7 o'clock then in Ballybuffet is probably the ultimate Ulster derby, Donegal versus Tyrone. And I think Tyrone all the time looking to see if Dara Canavan will be fit. But the way Donegal are playing up front, Andrew, the way they're transitioning in attack, the way they're switching the focus of playing the full forward line, they're hand-passing at speed, it's a joy to behold. You'd imagine with the Ulster title in their bag against an inconsistent Tyrone side that Donegal will win that. You'd imagine Armagh would have the edge on Derry. Louth should be able to bring a bit of belief and beat Monaghan, and Meath versus Cork is anybody's.
And before we go, let's talk the Joe McDonagh Cup round 5 and some very interesting fixtures to finish. Carlow, Laois, Kerry versus Westmeath and Austin Stack Park. And then the big one, Kildare on an absolute roll. They take on Down in St. Conlon's Park, all thrown in at 2.
Absolute roll. And if Kildare get a win over Down, they'll be rightly set for a place in their first ever Joe McDonagh Cup final. Laois and Carlow play each other. All three teams are on 6 points. So, you know, Kildare will be looking to see what happens in that Laois-Carlow game and see if they can beat Down, who have been Kildare's bogey team over the last few years, Andrew. But on current form, Down are 4 points behind Kildare. So that could be a tricky one for Down. However, I'm watching Down hurling for the last few years, and they're the most resilient bunch you could ever meet in your life. At home in Newbridge, Kildare should really, really have a great chance here. And this comes a year when they've won 3 Joe McDonagh Cup games. Previous to that, Andrew, they had won 0 out of 8. And they've won 10 out of 10 Christy Ring games in the past 2 years. And they've always found it hard to step up. This time around, I believe their target was to stay in the Joe McDonagh Cup. They got beaten by a point by Kerry on opening day. That was seen as an almighty setback. And would they recover from it? And would they go straight back down again? But no, they've managed to beat Laois, they managed to beat Carlow, and they managed to beat Westmeath. And the work that's gone into the county, this is the ultimate slow build. And they've kept at it. And now they're on the cusp of a Joe McDonagh Cup final appearance. And the population is so big, and there is strong hurling pockets, that there's no reason why they can't continue development. But to get to a McDonagh Cup final would be huge. Equally, Down won't want to go down to the Christy Ring, and they'll be battling for their lives. That'll be a great game to take in if you're anywhere around Newbridge on Saturday.
Damien, thanks for joining us.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Game On.
Ladies football.
Yes, delighted to say that I am joined in studio by Nadine Doherty. Happy Wednesday to you, Nadine.
You too, Andrew. How's things?
Good. Things are well. Great. Things are sunny. Haven't eaten a lot of ice cream yet, but it's still early. It's still early. There is still time. It is only May. A long summer, a long hot summer awaits, we hope. Now, lots of action this Sunday in the TG Cahir Ladies College Senior Championship Final and the Munster Final as well. Let us start with Connacht. 1 o'clock start in Castlebar between Mayo and Galway. And I think we all expect Mayo to have too much strength for, or Galway to have too much strength for Mayo.
Yeah, I think so. Andrew, we've been talking about Mayo a lot, I suppose, so far this year, because Galway have been in Division 2, but, you know, that hasn't affected performances. You're looking at a Mayo team who lost 2 weeks ago to Galway, not by much, and I'd feel that Mayo would have taken a lot from the scoreline in that game. But you look at even how Galway lined out that day, you know, Olivia Dively, one of their top performers, she didn't feature at all. Louise Ward came on with about 15 minutes to go. And in fairness for Mayo as well, you know, they held back a few players. Aoife Geraghty has been injured, she didn't feature. They'll really need her this weekend, and Saoirse Lally didn't feature either. So both teams have a lot of people to come in. Whether Galway will play their full hand, I don't know. I feel they're probably looking further down the championship. But looking at the two teams, you know, Andrew, it's experience, you know, and panel depths and expectations. Very, very different on both sides. Galway see themselves as All-Ireland contenders, and rightly so. And I suppose Mayo are probably looking at, if they won a Connacht title, against all expectations, that would be a massive, massive achievement for them. But it's not your typical Connacht final that we'd be looking at, and you couldn't call it. Now, I've been very wrong in the past, and I could be wrong again this weekend, but I'd be shocked if it wasn't anything other than a really comfortable Galway win.
Yeah, given the depth of Galway's panel, it's difficult to see
God, they're so
Mayo
good.
Getting near them.
Yeah, Andrew, they're so good. You know, like, you just, I was looking earlier, their half-back line that they lined out with a few weeks ago, Charlotte Cooney, Nicola Ward and Hannah Noon, I mean, three all-stars in themselves. And, you know, you look at the flip side of the Mayo attack, and the only names really that you'd fully recognise would be Sinead Walsh and Catherine Sullivan. So, you know, it just pulls apart.
Now, in contrast to that, in Mallow after that at 2:30, it is Kerry against Waterford. And I mean, I know we're talking about Kerry, the All-Ireland champions, the reigning Munster champions, but Waterford have the bit between their teeth, and they're really challenging to go in Munster.
Oh, they are. They absolutely are, Andrew. And there's been nothing between these teams. You know, I was looking back there in the league. Kerry,
was it one point?
Yeah, like 1 point in the league. It was 2-6-9 to Kerry, and they got a you know, the first goal was dodgy enough, as we'd say. It was a goalkeeping error. So there's nothing between them. And, you know, you're looking at Waterford. I don't think they've been in a provincial final in almost 20 years, maybe possibly more. They've just been building really nicely. I just feel with them, if they're able to avoid conceding sloppy goals against the run of play that has happened to them so often this year, I think they'll be in the mix, because they have shown that they're really capable of frustrating any attack. But they're familiar with Kerry, having played them so often over the years. So I think if they keep Kerry to long range shooting, limit those poor goal scoring opportunities that they give away, they'll be in the mix. And they also, for them to get over the line, because Kerry are heavy favourites, I think they really need their own full forward line firing and all.
They have been scoring goals this season. So a couple of goals, because I know against Cork, they beat Cork by 9 points. Kerry only beat Cork by 6 points. So they're well capable. 3 goals scored against Cork, 2 goals scored against Tip, and a goal and 11 scored against Kerry.
Oh, not bad shooting. They're not bad at all. And, you know, they've top forwards, Chloe Fennell, Lauren McGregor. If they're on form, they're in with a chance. But, you know, to give Kerry huge credit that they deserve, they've Danielle O'Leary in there on the inside forward line. Wonderful player. She makes the ball stick. She has Sheaf Roche coming off her, Niamh Carmody. Like, they have talent everywhere. Kerry favourites, but genuinely would not be surprised if Waterford sneaked it.
That's a 2:30 start in Mallow. So very briefly, what happens after the provincial finals? What is the All-Ireland Championship about, and how will it work?
Yeah, so very similar to the men's, Andrew. We have 4 groups, 3 in each group. They all play each other once, and the top 2 go through, and it's seeded. The draw was done before the provincials as well. You know, the teams weren't named, but the permutations were, which, like the men's, it's a little bit tricky. I don't agree with it, but the way it's lined out, your provincial winners all go into each group, so they're guaranteed a place almost, and then your runners up and your third and fourth place in each championship.
It's all ahead of us this summer. We're almost out of time. Will you be watching the Europa League final this evening?
Well, as a long-suffering Man United fan, I'll have to give it an eye.
Here's your brother, Paul, sniggering at us. Paul Curry still is with us, and we have confirmed lineups. I'll go through the United one. You can give us the Spurs one. So it is Andre Onana in goal. Harry Maguire not up front. He is centre of the back of the defence. Lenny Yarrow on the right. Luke Shaw on the left. Then Patrick Dorgu, wing back on the left. Mazraoui on the right, and in the middle of the park, Bruno Fernandes and Casemiro, with the 10 slots being taken up by Amad Diallo, and Mason Mount with Rasmus Højlund up front. And Spurs?
So I guess the big surprise from my new perspective is there's no Garnacho that we spoke about earlier. The big surprise for Spurs, but maybe the biggest decision, was the fact that Son is not fit enough to start the game. So they look like Vicario in goal, Porro, Romero, Van de Ven, Udogi. Midfield 3 of Bentancur, Basuma, Sarr, and then a front 3 of Brennan Johnson, Solanke, and Richarlison in for Son.
Okay, so change your prediction?
No, I'm still going to stick with 1-0 Tottenham.
Okay, well, that is all we have time for. And as I said earlier, may the best worst team win the Europa League. And we'll be back tomorrow. Damien O'Mara will be back with Thursday's Game On.